Oh my God, guys, it's podcast time, right?
It is. So we're back.
Matt is back.
Matt Attack. Hells yeah.
Matt
and,
Attack.
And do I have a surprise for y'all? Because I made a bracket.
Yes.
Finally, for the comics send-off that we said we would do. And I figured the bulk of it, we have 32 writers. So round one's going to take a bit. So let's start off with some Resident Evil 8 from you guys while respecting my ability to not have played it yet. And then we will launch into this debate. And by debate, I mean Matthew is right.
Oh, no. There's
we'll
no
see about that one. Okay.
Yeah.
But Matt, serious question. Are you going to play Resident Evil?
I mean, I've played the big ones. I haven't played all of them. I never played, like, I haven't played Zero.
Right.
But I've played one and two.
You don't consider this the big one? This is a big one.
Dude, you let me get to it? I'm going in order. Have not played Zero. I played one and two. I did not play three. I played four. Because four was the first one to be more action than straight horror, so it was the first one I could actually, like, get into.
Sure.
And then I skipped five and six because they were just, like, such a downgrade from four. I watched our friend Mad Wurz play five, though.
Yeah.
Five is okay.
Five is okay.
Yeah.
And then seven was too scurry for me, even though I did play a bit in VR.
Oh, that was
all about that scurry seven.
And then and then eight I'm planning on playing because it follows the story of seven, and you got to see what your boy Ethan's up to.
All right.
Can we just say first that someone at Capcom really hates Ethan?
Yeah, Ethan gets so much trauma.
I mean, considering what little physically happens to, like, Chris and Leon, and then you see what Ethan's put through the ringer with, it's like, why? So I told Josh this earlier. I'm pretty sure someone at Capcom had their wife cheat on them with someone named Ethan. And this is just divine payback or something.
Right. Somebody named Ethan was just kind of like, oh, I like this little lady. And the next thing you know it, I'm putting this guy in my game.
Putting this guy in my game, and I'm going to give him all the hand trauma.
All the hand. Yeah, it should be called Resident Evil 8 Hand Trauma.
Yeah. So I guess right off the bat, I want to say that I really am enjoying this game a lot. I feel like this is an Arkham Asylum, Arkham City scenario between this and 7. But as of where I am in the game, I'm not seeing the Resident Evilness.
Really?
Well, okay. So when you say a Resident Evil game, I picture, you know, Umbrella, some sort of bioweapon.
I got it. Yeah, you're early. You haven't gotten to the parts where it starts opening up to, like, ooh.
So let's be clear. I have completed the first two mini bosses, the first two bosses. I am on the third boss. And I have so far have seen a very small umbrella symbol on an altar, and that's kind of it.
Oh, okay, yeah. So the umbrella symbols are, like, scattered around.
Yes.
You kind of have to, like, you have to really. So I do want to say, this game is beautiful. By the way,
we're playing on PS5. I'm playing on Xbox Series X.
Yeah. The PS5, it looks great. It looks amazing.
Chris,
I am impressed by the lighting.
I've got to ask, how are the load times in Resident Evil on Xbox?
Non-existent.
Yeah.
Because Digital Foundry did a thing where they said it was like 7 seconds or so.
I've not noticed. Even from Quick Resume, I think Quick Resume is up to generously 20 seconds. From turning the system off.
Yeah, all I know is from Digital Foundry, and they were like, on PlayStation, it's 0.5 seconds, and on Xbox, it can get up to 7 seconds. And I'm like, oh, that's a big gap.
Yeah, but it's a big gap, but, like, it's still, like, 7 seconds.
Yeah, that's whatever.
saving the game is instantaneous. Maybe 20 seconds from cold boot to back into it.
Yeah, that's the thing. That doesn't exist.
What, yeah. Cold boot?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I like quick resume, so.
Quick resume is great.
The PlayStation 5 controller has a lot of really cool dynamics happening in with just the gunplay. And the weight. The guns have, like, a weight to them. The sniper rifle, if you try to aim, that controller's kicking back at you. And shooting it, you feel it. The handguns can quick come up. You know, you can't keep on firing the trigger, or, like, the trigger starts, like, fighting back with you. And I'm impressed by the little details in this game when it comes to lighting, just structures, just everything. It's like they've really put a lot into the visual aspects of this game.
And it almost doesn't feel like a cross-gen game.
No, it really doesn't, and it's really... I have the PlayStation 4 version, but, you know, I'm not going to be like, oh, let me...
Wait, why?
Yeah, why?
You have a PS5.
I'm not playing the PlayStation 4 version. It's saying it came with the purchase.
Huh?
The PlayStation 4 version came with the purchase of the PlayStation 5 version.
Oh.
Did it?
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay.
That I did not know.
And also Resident Evil Versus.
Yeah, whatever. I couldn't care about that.
But I'm really impressed by this game. I'm really impressed by, like, the next-gen games. And I'm liking the state of the PlayStation right now.
Well, that actually brings up a good point, because I keep talking about Resident Evil. I'll circle back to mine. This is Resident Evil time.
I do want to say that this game in particular owes a big debt to Resident Evil 4.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
This is
a sequel to Resident Evil 4.
No, I wouldn't say sequel, but it is well, definitely like.
It's the gameplay sequel.
Yeah, it's a spiritual successor.
In first person. And it's like Resident Evil 7 plus 4.
Yes, because I've noticed I'm at the point now where there's a giant fish monster.
Oh, yeah.
I was explaining to Callie about Del Lago from Resident Evil 4.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's the merchant, there's the inventory box, there's the doll boss.
Oh yeah,
it's very similar to Resident Evil 4, and maybe, you know, people made the joke like, why isn't there a Resident Evil 4 remake? Well, that's what 8 is, and that's kind of true.
And it's kind of true, and I think it's better to have 8 because you got the story continuing, and you have some really interesting aspects about the story. Really, no spoilers, but I think it's more of like if you're paying attention to Ethan's story. And maybe to all the hand trauma, I think, and let's, I guess we do a 5 seconds here, because I don't know, Matt, is this a spoiler? Would this be considered a spoiler? 5 seconds up. I think Ethan might be infected by the mole.
Yeah, I would kind of half-heartedly mention last night while I was playing to my wife, is Ethan a bioweapon at this point?
Yeah, I kind of feel like he might be.
Well, he's had so much goo jumped on him and everything reattached. I mean, he's more goo than man at this point.
Right, we don't know what he really looks like.
Yeah.
More goo than man. That's a statement.
Yeah. I do want to
saying he's a gooman? He's a gooman bean?
Yeah, he's like a gooigi.
Gooigi.
I do wonder though, and I'm not a hardcore Resident Evil fan. I do wonder what they feel about Chris.
Oh, man.
Well, I'll tell you how I feel about Chris.
Yeah.
Worst part of the podcast.
Oh, this guy with the jokes. I'm talking about Chris Redfield, you silly.
Mm.
Yeah. I think Chris... Here's the situation with Chris I'm feeling. I feel like Chris knows what's going down, and he's not going to let Ethan know because that's going to be the big reveal at the end.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I will say that his actions are not outright villainous, but they are dickish.
Oh, brutal.
Brutal. So I that is a point of view that I really want to know about, like how fans are treating that, Chris.
That opening scene was like, I was like, oh, this is nice. Oh, little baby. Aw. And then Chris shows up and I was like, oh, what the shit?
Yeah, that's an ugly ass baby though. I do want to point out though, the thing I texted the group last night about how much I dislike babies. That section of the game is one of my most disliked sections I've ever played in anything.
Man, I enjoyed it. Kate was watching me when I was playing that part, and she was like, "It's like an elaborate escape room," and I was like, "Yeah." Then we followed something, and then it was like, nope.
It reminded me of Outlast, a game which I desperately do not like because I don't like running and hiding in my games.
Oh, yeah, you had to do some hiding.
I don't like it. It was at the point where I think I had died by like the third or fourth time and I was hiding in a closet. And I was just telling Callie, I hate this. I want to kind of just stop playing this right now.
Oh, man.
So, you know, let that be your guide. But I think it's a great game. I'm very excited to keep playing it.
Yeah. Oh, it gets really... once you get out from the lake area, the story starts really unfolding really nicely.
Yeah. And I will say, too little of our big-titted vampire girlfriend. Far too little.
Far too little, but it was good. I felt like it was really good when it was there.
I agree. But I was just kind of like, oh, I guess we're done with her now.
That was a pretty fun fight. I really thought the battle mechanics with the daughters was really cool.
Yes. I thought they were a little too easy.
Are you playing on casual?
Yeah.
Okay. That's why.
But I thought the game on easy was a little too easy.
But I also feel like the castle was the idea for one big game, and they really truncated it down into this chunk of a game. I felt a little disappointed that it wasn't bigger.
I see what you mean. It should have been bigger. The castle is great. There's some really creepy parts of the castle when you go in and out of like different doors where you'll see like a statue's face looking at you. I've got thrown off multiple times by that. I was like, "Ooh, that was no."
Yeah, you know what got me is in her bedroom. There's like a giant dress mannequin that has the hat on it as well.
Ooh, yeah.
And that fucking got me every time I walked into that room.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So we'll circle back to this once we've completed it and give our final thoughts, probably in the next week or so.
Yeah, I will definitely be done with the game by the weekend because Mass Effect Legendary Edition is coming out.
Fuck yeah!
Fuck yeah!
I'm so excited to play Mass Effect with Caitlin and let her help choose the decisions.
Dude, yeah. I am.
I was talking to Chris about this earlier. She's going to make it impossible to make a good playthrough because at the slightest, like, provocation, she's going to be like, fucking kill them all. I'm going to be like, oh, so much for saving the Rachni. So much for the Geth Quarian Alliance. Now she's going to be like, fucking nuke them. Kill them all.
And that reporter is going to get jacked in the face so many times by
Kate. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. Well, to be fair, you do that even if you're Paragon.
That's true.
That reporter's asking for it.
Yeah, it's true.
Man, yeah, no, that Mass Effect Legendary Edition, I'm so excited to play the first game again. It's still my favorite in the series. It's got the best music in the series.
I'm excited because they finally fixed the Mako control, driving around the planets won't suck.
I'm excited because you can turn it back to original settings if you want.
Yeah,
and why would you? Of course you would, Chris.
Oh, poor Chris.
You disgust me.
Yeah, whatever. But yeah, we'll talk about Resident Evil next week and Mass Effect once it's started.
Yeah, we got some good things to talk about next week.
Yes.
Yep, yep.
And you know, we'll be deeper into the Hellfire Gala.
I'm very, very interested in what's happening in that.
Bruh.
The only thing I will say that I dislike, and I don't know if Matt's seen this, so this
I might... have not read it yet, so shush.
I haven't read it. It was an ad that I saw online.
Okay.
That the next event coming out of this was kind of spoiled, and I don't like that it was spoiled. That it's something I have to pay attention to in the gala.
Okay. Well, all don't right. tell me.
I won't. But aside from that, yes. We looked at all the clothing and the such. The gala has begun today, so we will figure out like what that all
in
means.
In which book did it start?
Huh?
In which book did the gala start?
I thought it was X-Corps.
Okay, yeah, I picked up X-Corps, and I picked up X-Factor, and I picked up Children of the Atom.
Okay, so I'm not 100% which book it starts in. I thought it was X-Corps, but, you know, don't complain to me if it's not.
I won't.
Good. Don't.
Okay, so we had some big news drop today.
What happened?
So, not big news in like the concrete setting, but just so E3 is 3 weeks away.
Yes.
It's all virtual, but it seems like all the big players are returning. So it's going to be a big, like Square Enix is going to have their own conference again. So you know we're getting some news. Bethesda will no longer have their own conference, which means Microsoft's conference is going to be even better. I guarantee you they're going to be real excited to show off Starfield for the first time with only on Xbox, like, slogan.
Yes.
You think it's going to have
Xbox? I do. Now, the only reason it wouldn't is if there was already distribution plans in place from before Bethesda got bought. But
yeah.
Phil Spencer made an announcement that said, like, he didn't outright say their games will never come on PlayStation, but he did say you don't spend $7.5 billion to not have exclusives.
No, that's true.
So now the best case scenario for them is they launch first on Xbox, and then a year later they hit PlayStation. They double dip, and they get even more money. So who knows? But I guarantee you we see the first footage of Starfield. Maybe not Elder Scrolls, but definitely Starfield from the chatter I've been hearing. And so Microsoft will have a really good press conference because it'll be their first chance to show what all of their studios that they bought over the last generation are actually working on. We've seen some concept trailers, but we've seen zero gameplay of anything not called Halo Infinite. Like, we don't know. The Perfect Halo Dark Infinite game?
Will be there.
Oh, it will. It's launching in September. That's some insider knowledge. Shush. Okay. Halo Infinite will be this September. It's actually launching the same day as Deathloop, of all things.
Ooh, or is the Nolan Darkcast the launch of Halo Infinite?
What?
Are we officially announcing the launch day for Halo Infinite?
I'm just saying what I've heard is that it is the same day as Deathloop, so use that knowledge as you will, September launch, which is fitting for Halo because that's when Halo 3 launched. That's when Halo Reach launched. That's like that September has been Halo's month for a while. That's when Bungie...
November.
Yeah. Anyway, point is, Microsoft will have a really good conference, I think. But, circling back, PlayStation made an announcement today that I think is pretty interesting, because it counteracts the story from a couple weeks ago that said PlayStation was doubling down on only blockbuster games.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it was at the same time as they were, like, cutting down the Japan studios, which already made me sad. But then Astrobot Studio was kept, and that made me happy.
Right.
But anyway, the point is, the head of, who is it? Who's Herman Hulst? Used to be the head of Guerrilla Games. So he created Killzone, he created Horizon, and he's now in charge of I want to get his exact title right so I don't fuck it up. Hold on.
Okay.
So Herman Hulst is the head of PlayStation Studios worldwide. So he's not like the CEO of PlayStation. That's Jack Ryan or whoever that stupid British guy is that keeps fucking up. But Herman Hulst is in charge of like all of their first party games, basically.
Okay.
So he came out and announced that there are currently 25 first party games in development for the PlayStation 5.
Ooh, yeah.
More than half of them, we didn't get a hard number, but we got a percentage, are brand new IP.
Love a that brand new IP.
So that's, and they're not counting Returnal because House Marquee is not owned by PlayStation, so that is not a first party game.
Oh.
So that is pretty fucking cool news because we were thinking we were in a reverse Xbox scenario where for a whole generation Xbox was Forza, Gears, Halo only.
Yes.
We thought we were gonna be entering the Naughty Dog, God of War, and Spider-Man loop. But no, it turns out that they are going balls out. And we know one of them is Jade Raymond's new studio. They're doing the same thing they did with her that they did with Hideo Kojima for Death Stranding, which is she quit Google, and then they hired her and built an entire studio around her. They're like, we're giving you a studio. Build it up. And she's making a game exclusive to PS5. And she, of course, widely known as the person that created Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
So, and Chris would be happy. I think she had a big part in Splinter Cell.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's kind of interesting because Sony and Microsoft are taking two very different approaches to building up their library. Sony is literally taking talent and building up a studio around them. And Microsoft is just buying the studios. So
I guess what's going to actually work out for the best.
We'll see. It'll be interesting. It's kind of like Microsoft's entire model is so different now because it's all about Game Pass subs. They don't care if you don't drop $60 or $70 on a new game. They want you spending $15 a month because if they get millions of people doing that, it won't matter if the game they launch isn't for everybody because everyone is still paying them. You know?
Yeah.
So, Sony also said that they're working on their own answer to Game Pass. So that'll be interesting. So that's the PlayStation news that popped up today. So we have 25 new games, 50% or more, or a little above half are going to be new IP. Now, we don't know the scope of them. Some could be indie games. Some could be massive AAA games, but we know they're first-party games. So that's pretty fucking dope to me.
So what are our plans for E3? Do we have anything? Do we have a prediction show on the line?
I think we should plan a prediction show. It's been 2 years since we've had to do one.
Yes. So look forward to
next week or whenever the next show the three of us are on, we're going to do a prediction show. Because EA's coming out with one, and we already know the worst-kept secret is they're dropping Battlefield 6.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
So they've actually announced that. Battlefield 6 will be debuted at E3. So, and since it's EA, there's lots of other rumors about what we'll get. Like, we might get the first footage of Dragon Age 4. We might get a new look at what the next Mass Effect game's going to be. Who knows?
Very excited. Look forward to that in a couple of weeks when we sit down again.
When we sit down again. Oh, man.
So, Matt, is it time to begin our long-awaited ballot?
I think it is.
So, we talked about this over a month ago about the best writers at comics. So, we each submitted 10 writers with two wild cards, Jeff Johns and Brian Michael Bendis.
Like legacies. You know, like their respective companies, like juggernaut.
Yes.
You know, like even though Brian has swapped sides now and Jeff Johns has gone indie, they're still like widely respected as like the Marvel and DC big boys.
Right. So we're going to give our opinion. We're going to try to do this this tournament ballot. And we'll let you know who, in our opinion, is the best comic writer.
Okay, so 32 writers, and it's important to note, because this is important, especially in today's ecosystem, we are not including the writers personal issues, because some of these writers have ended up being very problematic. And we are, it's more about the stories than the person. You know what I mean? Like, we're not, we're voting against the person's bibliography, so to speak. Or, not bibliography, but their, body of work, yes. And I know that's a controversial take, because you don't always want to separate the art from the artist. But for the sake of this chart, if we didn't, we wouldn't be able to do this. And so for the sake of this only, we will just be talking straight. Because, I mean, Geoff Johns alone, all the stuff that has popped up recently with Ray Fisher and his treatment and how, like, apparently secretly racist Geoff Johns has been for ages is coming to light. And it's just, yeah, that's the disclaimer for this. So if you're listening to this and you're like, wow, I can't believe they counted this person, that's why.
Yes. Going purely off body of work.
So 32 writers. I put it in a website called Bracket HQ that helped build this bracket and randomized it. So even though I put them in the order we wrote them, they're completely randomized.
Okay.
So we are going to do the fucking thing. Let's do the thing. Do we need a drum roll?
Yeah, first round. Drum roll.
Nice. Awesome drum roll. Okay. Number one. Round one. We have Jeff Lemire versus Matt Fraction.
Ooh.
Oh.
Sure. Off the bat, pretty hard.
Look. Look, if you think, like, we have some heavyweight first round goes, okay? It's not going to be easy. Now, I'm going to point out something.
Yes.
Because everyone submitted the books that they felt this writer, their writers should be known for, like their marquee books that they wanted to be used in the deliberation. So each time I announce a matchup, I'm going to read the books that we submitted. Okay. Now, I didn't want us to go crazy, so I was like, hey, just pick like 2 to 3 of what your favorite books are for each writer, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, hold on. I'm taking screenshots so I can just cycle through them quickly.
Sure.
My picks.
They're both Josh's picks. That is unfortunate. Oof. Oh, wait. Holy shit. We forgot to talk about the biggest news of the day.
What's that?
Venture Bros is getting a movie to finish off the series.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
HBO Max coming in clutch.
Fuck yeah.
Ugh. Anyway, okay. I'm so happy. We can talk about that later. I'm so excited. Anyway, so Josh, like I said, Josh only put one for each. So Josh, feel free to jump in with more. But for Jeff Lemire, you put Animal Man. And Matt Fraction, you put Hawkeye. Now, it has to be said, Fraction is also huge for sex criminals, which is one of Image's best. But for me, just like you, Hawkeye, and actually for me, it was Iron Fist. Fraction is the reason Iron Fist is my favorite Marvel character.
Fraction is so good against, I don't know, I like both these writers. I do, because I like Lemire's Animal Man, I like Lemire's Moon Knight, and I feel like Lemire has a really strong catalog, but I don't know. I'm going right out, and I'm going to go Fraction.
What else did you want for Lemire? Because Lemire, for me, was Animal Man. But a lot of other of Lemire's other stuff, outside, I will say his Justice League Dark was really good.
Yeah. No, I say you guys have, if you guys think that Lemire's lineup can beat Matt Fraction.
I don't think, and that's the problem is that's the reality of the situation. When two people we like go up against each other, you just got to put the bodies of work against each other, right? Chris, do you want to weigh in on that?
I mean, I think my vote came down to Fraction almost immediately. I think that what Fraction has done more stuff than Lemire, and I think his stuff is just overall better. You know, we talk about his Iron Fist and his Hawkeye. He had runs on X-Men. He had runs on Thor. Yeah. And, you know, Sex Criminals, of course, you know, is a god-tier work. So and also, you know, we talk about he did Jimmy Olsen, the Jimmy Olsen maxi series that came out last year. That thing is a masterpiece. So I'm going to give it to Fraction. No hesitations. Even though Lemire's Animal Man is excellent.
Yeah. Man, Fraction.
Fraction.
Fraction. So you're saying that that Jeff Lemire makes up a fraction of Matt's quality?
Yeah.
Nope.
That's what I meant.
That's what I heard.
Oh, no.
Okay, cool. So, round one, in the bag.
Yes.
Round two, if you're ready.
Yeah.
This for me might be one of the hardest.
Okay.
This is rough. Okay?
Okay.
Tom King versus Scott Snyder.
Ooh.
Now, if I recall, both of these were mine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they were. So obviously Scott Snyder is just synonymous with DC for now, but he's also been dropping a bunch of really high profile image stuff. But the stuff I put for Snyder, his run on Batman has defined the modern era. But then again, so is Tom King. Literally, Tom King took over for Scott Snyder. But then Scott Snyder went ahead and made a definitive run on Justice League that led into Scott Snyder's death metal and just regular metal. And just like Scott Snyder's been playing around with this one long story since he started Batman. But then Scott Snyder's also done Undiscovered Country, which is one of my favorite current Image books. And then Tom King did Batman. He's the king of maxi series. You know, he's the one that gave us Strange Adventures, Mr. Miracle, and The Vision. But then his also current run on Batman was fucking great. And then he did the event series Heroes in Crisis. So it's just, it sucks because I love them both, but my gut reaction off the bat is Snyder just has the more impactful library because his whole body of work could be told as one long story. And I love that.
Yeah, that's...
Please feel free to weigh in. I can't be the only one making decisions.
No. I was letting you finish up.
Chris, you go.
Okay. So I agree with you about what Scott Snyder has done with modern Batman and even pre-52, Dick Grayson Batman. He has done quite a lot in DC, and his overall magnum opus is, it sure is something. And you know, your mileage will vary depending on how much you care for metal and, you know, all the stuff that has come out of it. But I look at Tom King and I look at Vision and I look at Mr. Miracle and I look at the Grayson series where he was a super spy.
That's a good one too. Yeah.
And you know,
I would love Tom King to do a Nightwing series.
I would too. Even the weird Batman Elmer Fudd, crossover. So this is going to be tough, but I am going to give it to Tom King because Vision, Mr. Miracle, and currently Strange Adventure, I think we have to, you know, put them higher than just Batman.
Well, then that means, well, for me, it's, like I said, Justice League, but
sure.
That means Josh is our tiebreaker.
Yes, and Josh, whatever you pick, I support you.
I'm so sorry, Matt. I am very, very sorry, but I'm going with King.
Again, Vision, both of these were my decisions, so either way.
The Vision. Yeah, I know, right? Either way, you're winning. But, like, the Vision was so good. And it was, that came out during, like, a whole renaissance of, like, Marvel Comics. And I don't know, man, that Vision was so good. And I don't know if you guys know about the little known fact about Mr. King. Apparently, he was an assistant to the X-Men writer Chris Claremont before joining the CIA.
I was going to say, also, he's a CIA person, which is why his political intrigue stuff is so good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and Darkseid is, man. That's all I'm going to say about that.
It's fine. Look, it is what it is, my friends.
Yes.
All right. Next up,
yeah,
we have Bill Willingham,
right,
versus Ed Brubaker.
Oh Jesus! Okay.
And I feel like, as much as Fables is one of my all-time favorites, and it's a primary reason why I even got into comics, that's where the list stops.
Yeah.
Like, he's a lot like Neil Gaiman to me, in that the thing he's most known for is a long-running, incredible series. But then you look at Ed Brubaker, and whether he's even working with superheroes or his own stuff, like his work on Captain America, his work on Daredevil, his work on Catwoman, those things are incredible. But and then he actually co-wrote Iron Fist with Matt Fraction. So his superhero stuff is top-notch, but then you have Criminal, Killer Be Killed, Fade Out, Velvet, like, he's the king. Him and his Sean Murphy, I think, is his artist. Like, you give him a crime noir story, and he's fucking crushing it.
He just kills it.
Yes, I agree. It's not even a close pick. As much as I adore Fable and Jack of Fable and the whole Fables family, Brubaker's just done more. And his stuff is just so much better, like all of it.
Like I said, this one was not a heavy hitter up. Like I feel for Bill. Like I said, I want it to be known, Fables is one of my all-time favorites and one of the all-time greats. Yeah. But Ed Brubaker's body of work just cannot be understated.
I'm looking on his Wikipedia, his bibliography, and I just don't see like a massive run of anything that's not Fables. So
that's what I'm saying. Like, he's done other stuff, but he's only on this list because of Fables.
Yes. So it's
That was it.
Brubaker.
It's the Brubaker for me, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ed.
All right. So next up, we have Peter Tomasi and Brian Q. Miller. Now, I believe both of these were Chris's.
Yes.
So Chris put down for Brian Q. Miller. Obviously, his big one for us was Batgirl. His run on Batgirl with Stephanie Brown was amazing.
Yes.
Peter Tomasi was behind Superman Rebirth. And more importantly, for at least Chris and I, he was the writer of Green Lantern Corps during the absolute height of Green Lantern greatness. While Geoff Johns took care of Green Lantern proper, Tomasi was the one handling all of the other characters. That wasn't Hal. So, Peter Tomasi, Brian Q. Miller, Chris, since these were both yours, let's kick it over to you.
So, this is not as not how I wanted this to play out. I'm at the mercy of the randomizer. Brian Q. Miller's Batgirl is a top tier book. It's a tremendous run. It's sadly it was gone, but that's kind of the end of where Brian Q. Miller is, because he went on. He did Smallville. He did a couple of other minor things, and then you look at Tomasi, and Tomasi's got Green Lantern Corps. He's got Batman and Robin. He's got
The Super Sons books right now.
You know, he's got Nightwing. He's got so much other stuff that I got to give it to him. And his stuff is all very good. He's an extremely solid comic writer that if you put him on a book, then you know you're getting something pretty worthwhile out of it. So it's Tomasi.
Josh?
Chris, I'm with Chris. Tomasi. That Green Lantern Corps was great. That was good stuff.
And here's the thing, I'm also with Chris because, it's Bill Willingham syndrome. The thing he's known for was so good, but I can't stack up to a series of other stuff that is also really good, but just so much more of it that it towers over it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder what happened to Brian Q. Miller, because we saw him at Comic-Con, and then that's kind of the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
He hasn't done anything since 2014, so
maybe he just stopped.
I guess. Bummer.
Okay, so next up is a go out against two art authors that are known for their comedy or their humor in their work, more or less. We have Ryan North.
Oh, no.
Of Squirrel Girl fame.
Yes.
And that was one of Josh's. So, Josh, is there anything else besides Squirrel Girl that you want to drop for Ryan North? Because that's what you put.
Oh, fuck, no. Squirrel Girl is the only thing I've actually read that he's done. And
I mean, don't get me wrong. It's so good.
It's so good. It's, yeah. That's my strong thing. I was hoping one of you guys would back me up on this one.
Well, I would also.
Well, I would have.
Jughead and.
Yes. Oh, Jughead. Adventure yes. Time.
Yeah.
And he did do. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Ryan North, Adventure Time, Jughead, Unbeatable Squirrel Girl.
Yeah.
He's going up against Kieran Gillen of The Wicked and the Divine, Young Avengers, Images Die, a bunch of other music-based stuff like Phonogram.
Darth
so
Vader.
Kieran Gillen versus Ryan North. Yeah, he's done some Star Wars stuff too. So Kieran was my pick. Ryan North was Josh's pick. So Chris is the neutral third party. Start us off.
This is a really
hello.
Yeah, I know this is a really tough one, because Ryan North's Squirrel Girl, you know, really fixed that character from what she used to be in the long ago as kind of a joke, and now, you know, she became kind of empowered. His Adventure Time comics were much more than what the show had put them out. You know, Jughead was kind of fun, but I look at Kieran Gillen's body of work. You know, his Image stuff with Phonogram, Wicked and Divine, his stuff in Generation Hope, Uncanny X-Men, you know, his stuff on Thor, his stuff on Iron Man, his stuff in Star Wars and Dr. Aphra and Darth Vader. And I'm going to give it to Kieran because I think his overall body work is bigger and better. That is said, though, if Ryan North does something tomorrow, I'm buying that issue. I don't care.
Oh man, Chris, yeah. I'm Wicked and Divine.
So, but this one hurts. This is the one that hurts the most so far.
Man. I'm going to take Chris's side on this. Wicked and Divine, man, it's just so good.
So you're going against your own pick.
I'm going against my own pick. This was going to happen. We knew this was going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. Fucking but yeah, that I mean, obviously, my pick was also going to be Kieran Gillen. I mean, his stuff, so good. And he's really funny. I got a video of him making fun of Chris for not being at Comic-Con one year.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
That's pretty good.
Okay, so next, I think this one's going to come down to Josh.
Okay.
We have Jason Aaron, who gave us Wolverine and the X-Men, Thor, God of Thunder, and indie stuff and other things. Chris, this is your pick if you want to fill in some gaps for me.
Okay.
Versus Robert Kirkman. Who most known for Walking Dead, most notably currently Invincible, because that's gotten a big push. I'm a big fan of his most recent Image book, Die, 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 which is absolutely... Remember I showed you guys the splash page of the fight in space with Barack Obama?
Yes.
And it was being viewed by all the aliens. Just good stuff. Wow. So Outcast and other stuff. Just Robert Kirkman is the closest thing to a household name that comics get, but Jason Aaron is, I know, one of Chris's favorites, and Wolverine and the X-Men is one of the best X-Men books around.
Yes. So let's...
Yeah. So let's let Josh start the deliberation since he's the only one that didn't have a pick in this round.
Okay.
So, I don't like The Walking Dead. So
to
I'm
be
going
fair, me
Jason.
Either.
I'm going with Jason. I already like his body of work already, so... I'm going with Mr. Aaron. Mr. Aaron.
Just a shame.
yes, so...
You act like I only picked... I picked him for Invincible, you motherfucker.
Yes. So, I know... I appreciate how tough this is for you, but I have tried Invincible and I've tried The Walking Dead, and I have not been able to get in any of them. They just don't click for me. Meanwhile, Jason Aaron scalped Wolverine and the X-Men, Wolverine proper, Thor, God of Thunder, leading into War of Realms with his magnum opus. The Avengers currently, Southern Bastards. I mean, he does so much that's so good, and he, you know, he's a rarity in comics as like a true blue Southern boy who's writing comics and brings kind of a Southern slant to his works.
Yeah.
So,
you know what? That's fair, because again, Jason Aaron is just really good too. Honestly, if it wasn't for Invincible, I wouldn't even be mad. I probably wouldn't have even put him on the list.
Robert Kirkman is really important, though. I mean, he's like Mark Millar in the pantheon of most important creators getting their stuff transferred to another medium.
So I realized with the time, we're only going to be able to finish the first half of the bracket for round one. So we have two more matches to go before we finish the left side of the bracket for round one. Okay.
All right, let's do it.
All right, Tom Taylor, Injustice, All New Wolverine, Nightwing, Deceased, Suicide Squad, a whole slew of things. Currently writing Batman the Detective, versus Fabian Nicieza.
Nicieza.
Yeah, who Chris put down for X-Men and Red Robin.
Yes.
So, once again, it's a Chris and me pick, so Josh, start us up.
So, first off, Tom Taylor's the only one I know. So, I'm going to go with Tom Taylor.
Fair. I mean, I had to look up who the other one was. I didn't recognize him first either. So, Chris, why don't you give us some discussion about why you picked Fabian, because that was a surprising pick.
Well, okay, so the real answer is because I put my list in last and I was kind of scrambling for people to add to my list. But I think Fabian Nicieza deserves a little more credit than he possibly gets. You know, he had the unenviable task of taking over for Chris Claremont and Rob Liefeld in X-Men and X-Force. And he led them through the Age of Apocalypse. Yes, and his you know,
that I didn't know,
and his work, you know, Red Robin was such a great little book.
I fucking loved Red Robin.
I loved it too.
I actually had no idea that was him.
Yeah, and you know, he's a guy that you will see his name pop up on a book, and you know it's going to be at least very solid, but probably not exceptional.
Red Robin.
Yeah, so I had to give him some praise on this list, and you know, I think Tom Taylor, I think his work on Wolverine and particularly Deceased, which is a book that I thought was going to be pretty terrible, that turned out to be pretty spectacular. I think he deserves the praise. So, but yeah, I think you know, Fabian Nicieza, just an unfortunate one of the bracketing.
Yeah.
So
I didn't piece that together with that. That's who he was.
Yes.
Which really hurts because that's a lot of the time when I was reading X-Men comics.
Yeah.
But I didn't really recognize the name because I was young.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. And how long did it take us all to start, you know, paying attention to writers and artists?
Writers. Do love me some writers.
Shut the fuck up.
I'm going Tom Taylor because he's quickly become one of the writers that, like, when he gets announced on a book, I'm like, okay, I'm in. He's the reason I picked up the short-lived Suicide Squad book reboot before the current one.
Yeah.
He's the reason I picked up Batman the Detective, which just had issue 2 come out today, because I'm like, you know what? Fucking Tom Taylor, first of all, he loves, him and Tom King love Booster Gold in a way that I really appreciate, because they keep finding ways to put him in their books. And it's awesome. And also, Tom Taylor did what I never thought possible, which is take the 10-20-year-old concept of Marvel zombies and make it good again with Deceased. Like, I was like, I really thought that trope would be dead, but no, he fucking has crushed it. His Deceased work is great.
Yes.
And then Injustice is just one of the longest, most underappreciated long-running series that has been such a high bar of quality, considering it's based on a video game.
It's bonkers. I can't believe
Tom Taylor has established himself as the man who you hire when you want to creatively kill off some of everyone's favorite superheroes.
Yes, and I think not mentioned this, his work on All New Wolverine, which is the
New Wolverine was, and X-Men Red.
Yes, and yeah. But All New Wolverine in particular, I remember being so annoyed at how good it was every week.
It was on every week. It was it wasn't perfect, but it was just almost perfect. Like, you're like, this is good. Like,
his creation of Gabby.
And Honey Badger, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it was good.
Okay, you know what? The randomizer really did fucking save the best for last.
Okay.
This is going to be probably the most difficult one we've faced. Oh. I already know my answer, but I also understand why Josh is going to have his answer.
Oh.
Oh, God, okay.
Jeff Johns, the man behind JSA... the man behind Green Lantern, Flash. The reason Flash and Green Lantern even blew up the way they did.
Yeah.
Right? All of his works. I mean, his stuff on Justice League and Batman also, like, okay, you know Jeff Johns. I don't even have to go into it, right?
No.
Neil Gaiman.
Ooh.
Of Sandman.
Ooh.
So this is the ultimate, like, Bill Willingham scenario, right? Like, the guy with the crowning jewel of, but that's it, versus the guy with the incredible legacy of books. So this is going to be a tough one. Jeff Johns versus Neil Gaiman. Go.
I thought it was going to be Jeff Johns against Grant Morrison. I'm Sandman. I just can't. You can't. I don't
because
care.
Again, it's the Fable scenario. Like, I love Sandman. It's one of the all-time best. But the amount of books, like, one of the first books I ever read was Chris's run of Jeff Johns's Justice Society. And then he went to Flash, and then he went to Green Lantern and Infinite Crisis. And that's, like, Jeff Johns is 90% the reason I am a comics fan, because that was my era.
Yeah, just
No, so Chris,
I'm still sticking with, like, Neil.
No, I know. I'm just explaining my reasoning.
Yeah, you got it, Chris. You got to be it. What are you gonna do?
Well, it's the hard question, is it? You know, is it the masterpiece of one book or the very good multiple books? This is really hard because Sandman is one of the greatest things that comics have ever put out. It's you know, it perfectly encapsulates its time period. It goes to crazy places, and it's beautifully written. And then you have Jeff Johns, and, you know, his work on Teen Titans and Justice Society and Flash.
Oh, I forgot Teen Titans.
They revitalized a lot of those characters, particularly the Justice Society, who were kind of nowhere before this. Oh,
does it help about all the artists who participated in the Sandman series?
I mean, everyone.
No, for a fact, like, at least from my perspective, so much of the books I read of Chris's ended up being Jeff Johns' book.
I couldn't help it. He is so good. I will say this, though. I'm looking at Neil Gaiman's bibliography, and his non-Sandman, non-connected to Sandman stuff, you know, Batman, Whatever Happened to the Caped Crusader, which is a story I really fucking hate. You know, his Metamorpho comic from Wednesday Comics, which is okay.
Marvel 1602 is really good. I really like that one.
Yeah. I'm going to have to give it to Jeff Johns just because there's more good stuff in there than there's just the one excellent thing. And I think quantity will trump quality in this regard. But I will say that this is a hard, because I think Neil Gaiman kind of has the opposite problem of Bill Willingham, where he can take out a bunch of other people on our ballots.
Oh yeah,
easily.
Yeah,
definitely.
But it's just like I said,
it's unfortunate timing with the randomizer.
With the randomizer, but you know, Neil Gaiman could probably, on a different list, be top five, just from his one book. But you know, not today.
Yeah, I just want to end with just all the artists who participated in the Sandman.
Oh, Sandman? Oh, 100%, dude.
The amount of, I don't know, how it just created people's careers.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's such a perfect book. Even talking about it just gives me goosebumps.
Yes.
There are so many panels in that comic that it's just like, holy shit, they did that.
and let's be real, a whole generation of goths, you know.
Yeah, it's true. Let's be real.
From this, so.
He created a whole subgenre of human beings.
Yeah, the people that keep buying, what's her name, Tori Amos's albums.
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
All right. So that's is that the end of tonight?
It is.
That was good, guys. That was good.
It's a good start today. I like this ballot, and I kind of hope that we continue balloting other things.
Say this left side had a lot of heavy hitters going up against each other: Jeff Lemire versus Matt Fraction, Tom King versus Scott Snyder, and then of course Jeff Johns versus Neil Gaiman. The right side doesn't have as many as what I think would be as tough decisions. Although there is one that's going to break my heart.
Okay. Well, I can't wait to see it.
All right. So yeah, see you next week, everybody.
All right. Everyone have a good night. We'll be back next week. We'll continue on this list and maybe have more thoughts of Resident Evil. Who knows?
Yeah.
Huzzah.
Huzzah. Good night, everyone.
Good night.